been a week. Tell me, how is everything? Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Welcome to Kick Art.
Kia ora, and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen. Kick Arts is New Zealand's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Make sure you check us out at kickarts.org.nz to find out what arts are happening in your area, as well as how you can support us to stay on air. Perhaps you might be our future monthly sponsor. Tonight, we have all things theatre, books and music. To kick us off, here is Take a Deep Breath from Brooks and Johnston's new album, When Summer Falls, Break Down the Walls.
Oh, Emma, it's been another busy week as schools have rocked back. We're busy, we're getting lots of things coming through our inbox. It's great to see the arts world in New Zealand is busy, and we've got another jam-packed show tonight, so we can't talk for too long. But I'm curious, you've been out and about in the last week seeing some shows. What have you seen?
Yeah, it has. It's been another busy week. So I went out to Pukekohe, to Pukekohe Performing Arts production of Little Shop, which was one of the many theatre companies that had had to delay the show. I think this was their fourth time getting it off the ground. So it was fantastic for them to finally have it happen. A close-knit cast of 9 people and lots of local faces for Pukekohe to get along and support. The show closed on Saturday night. Absolutely fabulous use of the space with their set and everything. Some stellar voices in there, and it was just a good night out. Little Shop of Horrors has got some pretty cool little, you know, groovy tunes to groove along to. So that was great. And then Saturday I spent the day at Centre Stage up in Orewa, because Northern School of Performing Arts Theatre Awards were on, which are singing competitions for music, specifically for music theatre. So there's song and dance, song and costume, and all the categories specifically music theatre. And that was adjudicated by our friend Monica Moore, and I had some students in there. So it was great to see kids from 5 through to 21 having a great opportunity to perform lots of different numbers and getting feedback from someone different other than their teachers. And then Saturday night I had the absolute pleasure of being in the audience of Auckland Music Theatre's Little Woman, which is on actually by this time goes to air. Sadly it will have closed. Just amazing. Could not fault it one little bit. Beautiful voices. And of course I had the proud moment of having 2 of my past students in main leads, and just beautiful, all the cast, absolutely stellar, like I said. And I've got to just say before we get on, because I know we're in a hurry, the show wasn't even interrupted when one audience member got a little bit lost when she had to go to the bathroom partway through Act 1 and walked right across the stage in Acts of the Wings. So she totally missed going along the front of the audience before she came on, and she went down the centre aisle of AMT and straight across the stage and out the wing. It was quite amusing.
Brilliant. Oh, that's high praise from you, Emma. High praise. So well done to everyone that's performing at the moment. And you and I have got lots that we're catching up on over the next few weeks. Let's rock into the first interview of the night.
Let's go. It is my utmost pleasure to welcome to this evening's show someone that I have admired for many years, right back when he first workshopped this piece with Malia, and that is Rodney Bell, and he is here to talk about his piece, Meri Meri. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Emma. How are you doing?
Awesome, and it's great to have you here. So, for our listeners that maybe don't know who you are, Rodney, tell us a little bit about how you fit into dance and arts access and contemporary performance here in Aotearoa and, of course, internationally.
Well, tēnā koe anō, Emma. Ko tō ainui te waka, ko nā te manyapoto, te iwi, ko nā te rōra, te apu. So I descend from the Tainui waka. My primary tribe is nā te manyapoto, my sub-tribe, nā te rōra. Rodney Bell, here I am. So I've had a beautiful journey through dance for the last 27 years. I acquired my disability 31 years ago this month, and from a motor vehicle, a motorcycle accident, and had no feeling and control from my chest down. So through that journey, through this new vessel, Emma, I found sports and played wheelchair basketball for New Zealand for a number of years, and on that journey I was coaching Auckland Wheelchair Junior Basketball, and the teacher at the spine unit said, oh, I've got this lady with long red hair. She's fired up. She's just come back from the USA from a mixed ability dance company. She'd like to show a short video to the children. I said, yeah, I'll give her 20 minutes. Catherine Chappelle is her name, and she was teaching at Unitech at that time as a dance tutor. And she came in and showed these kids and said, hey, you want to come out on the floor, do a bit of demonstration with me? I said, sure. And she jumped all over me. I was like, wow, what's this thing? And then she bothered me for a long time trying to get me to go to this workshop. Anyway, I used to open the curtain, Emma, peep out and go, shh, to my flat base. Here comes that lady again. But one day she caught me off guard. And she chucked me in the car and we went to Thames to a little hall there. She said it was some sort of a movement workshop. I play harmonica. She just says, when the doors open, play your harmonica. Doors open. It was a performance piece, an improv contact. I was like, oh my gosh, what have I got myself into? Anyway, I was upside down on the ground trying to crawl off stage. She dragged me back on stage, guys. And then that's when the Seat of Dance stole my song. So I ended up becoming a founding member for Touch Compass Dance Company, or I hold close to my heart. I'm on the artistic direction panel now, along with Lucy Baeva and Suzanne Cohen. It's a disability-led organisation, so we built work around these principles that cloak Touch Compass now that are disability-driven, and what does that mean to have that disabled voice, disabled artist voice at the forefront. And on that journey, I ended up going over to the USA, and Access Dance Company fell in love with me. I did a summer intensive there over in Seattle. And then I was there for a week and they just said, look, we want you back. 2 years later, my dad passed away and I said, well, I'm getting out of town, you know. So I went back and danced with them for another 5 years. And then I ended up homeless on the street over there and got back here in 2015.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we dived into it. To Meri Meri, Emma. So we could talk a little bit about Meri Meri now if you want to fire away some prompts for me.
Definitely, because of course Meri Meri tells that story of your journey in such a beautiful way. Of course, being a solo show means it's less contact improvisation and more about you and your wheelchair. So I suppose you have got a partner there because you've got your wheelchair.
Yes, kia ora, Emma. Yeah, Meri Meri. Oh, what a beautiful light that's shining on me right now. Like you said, 2016, we put that piece on stage, how Meri Meri evolved was, I got back home thinking I'll retire for a few years from dance and have a rest on the couch, but Malia Johnson, the artistic director for Movement of the Human, we danced together through Touch Compass many moons ago, and we've always wanted to make a work together. So she told me what I was up to, and I said, look, I told her my journey, and she said, that's the piece. So originally I wanted to dance with lots of people in that work. We workshopped with a lot of different workers through that time of developing Meri Meri. And Malia just said, look, I think this show's a solo show. And I was like, ooh, here we go. Here we go. So Meri Meri, how it got its name is that when I got home, I had to find new ways of injecting myself back into tikanga, into Māoridom, but also back into my town. And my brother gave me a chunk of Māori. I started carving it, wondering what its journey was. I did a patu that eventually became my cousin's 40th birthday. But and Stephen, what I noticed is the sacrifice of this piece of wood was going through to make this beautiful thing, but yet it was already beautiful. The shavings of the ground reminded me of the sacrifice I had made through my journey in life to dance, you know, leaving my family, going on the solo journey, and voila, Meri Meri evolved from it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What do you want audiences to take from your show? You know, if you were sneaking a listen in the foyer as the audiences are walking out the door, what do you hope you might hear?
Well, I'm hoping that they're coming here wanting to be, you know, because obviously when they sit in their silence, they're probably wondering, what's this about? You know, is this dance? What sort of dance is this? Is it storytelling? This disabled man, how's he going to hold the space on his own? And, yeah, I just hope they come with their lived experience with an open heart, Stephen.
Mm.
And then I'll grasp my opportunity to dive into their heart and just show them my lived experience, and maybe they'll be able to help release their lived experience to me. I notice after the show a lot, it's because it's a solo autobiographical work, a lot of people come and open their hearts and share their life journeys too, which I really appreciate. So it's a lot of deep, just come to the show with open mind and deep listening.
Awesome. Now, a couple of years ago, you presented a talk. You were on a panel at Creative New Zealand about arts access. And, of course, you talked about the journey you've been on as a performer as well, as a disabled performer in New Zealand, where so many theatre spaces don't have good arts access. Is that correcting itself over the last few years, Rodney, or are we still going through that same dilemma?
No, it's definitely fixing itself, Emma. I feel that I go back to this deep listening space too, and bringing awareness is the key. And I think it's how you bring awareness. You can go in there, guns firing, and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Or we can sit down as one mind and have a collective consciousness on how we can fix things. Obviously, things take money. But we need to include these things in the budget too, because you're not only making that space accessible for the performer, but you're also making that, opening up to a whole new community that could come, you know, and enhance the space and air, and obviously bring people through the doors, but also setting a foundation for me. I'm setting a foundation for the future of our rangatahi dancers who are hotupua, who are extraordinary disabled people, to like have an opportunity to have a chance to look at dance as that creative space of self-expression, which we all need. Which we all need.
I think definitely over the years, arts access is definitely coming to the fore. You look at how many shows now are offering relaxed performances and auto-signed performances, or you know, the pre-show touch tours for our blind. And I think it's fantastic what companies like yourself, Touch Compass, Glass Ceiling Arts Collective, all of these companies are doing for arts access in Aotearoa.
Yes. Kia ora, Emma. Yeah, such a dynamic period. And it's all about universal access for me too. You know, everybody has the opportunity to come and witness and, like having live stream, you know, because a lot of people can't get out of their homes. We have a lot of anxiety now with COVID. So what does that mean for people to experience art, and also for the artists themselves? I noticed that Creative New Zealand have opened the doors now, and I'm co-chairing a committee there that are looking at different ways of bringing awareness into Creative New Zealand in relationship to access and what that might mean for disabled artists to access funds and start those big conversations where everybody's just at the table respecting each other.
Mm. Fantastic. That's so amazing. So tell us, where can we find, where can our listeners find out more about Meri Meri, get tickets?
Yeah, thanks, Emma. You can go on the Q Theatre website. It's going to be on the 9th, 10th and 11th, the show at Q Theatre in the Rangatira stage. Go on the Q Theatre website, and you can also go on Movement of the Human website, Moth.
Well, we wish you every success with the season, and we'll be excited to see what's up next for Rodney Bell after that.
Hey, tēnā koro, Stephen and Emma, thank you for enhancing us as artists. We really appreciate you. Thank you for what you do. Tēnā to me.
Thank you.
Target sliding, whispering eternity.
Well, that was Mishmash Speechless from Ministry of Sound.
Now, Emma, a mixed Royal New Zealand ballet, bands, authors, you name it tonight. Of course, we've always got to say a quick hello to our dear friend, Stephen Lyons, and he's brought in a mate tonight, Greg Ward. So welcome to the show, team.
Kia ora, thanks for having us.
Oh, tēnā koura, great to be here.
Great to
no worries at all. Stephen didn't wear his shirt for us, though, so I'm disappointed. He's already lost a couple of points because he hasn't got his colourful shirt on.
James and Omaru is feeling let down tonight.
The good news is that I'm actually promoting two nights of a show, so that's like two chances to see me wearing two different shirts.
There we go. Now, because this was a last-minute request to promote two nights of a show, and we're squeezing you in, what we're going to do is we're going to set our timer, and it's going to be a little bit like a theatre sports game, because you're going to have 2 minutes to tell us as much as you can. Are you ready, the two of you?
Yes.
Fabulous. Go.
All right, well, I'm going to tell you the title, then Greg's going to tell you a little bit about the show. It's called The Mishmash, and it's an improvised spectacular featuring Lovelamp, Bullrush, and with host Lyons and Ward.
So we're going to kick off with one of our improv troupes on the first night. We don't know which one it'll be, actually. We've got Lovelamp on and Bullrush, so they'll alternate on both nights. We will then follow that with what we're calling our duo headline act. First time we're actually getting together as a duo improvisationally. We've worked for 20-odd years on various different stages individually and together, but this is the first time actually on our own in this duo element. So looking forward to this, and the two troops before us are absolutely fantastic and incredibly eclectic in the way they perform.
Yeah, and some of the listeners will be familiar with Lovelamp and Bullrush, both incredible improv groups, and we're very excited to have them on the show working with us. We're also, it's a big event for me. It's my first time getting to put on a show and perform at Pitt Street Theatre in Auckland, which is getting great feedback, and I'm hearing wonderful things. But of course, we're running out of time, so you probably need to know when this is happening.
We do.
Greg.
We're kicking them off at on the 12th and 13th of August. That's Friday and Saturday. We're kicking off at, 7:30 p.m. We can find tickets via Event Finder or contact Stephen at Paper Goat.
Well done, team. And what can audiences expect, Stephen? What are you going to hear them saying as they leave your show?
I think they're going to be saying, what a beautiful, delicious smorgasbord of improvised theatre. Yum, yum, yum. I can't wait for more, but I am full up tonight.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And bound to be a comment or two about your shirt. So The Mishmash featuring Lovelamp and Bullrush, 12th and 13th of August at Pitt Street Theatre. Head to Event Finder for the tickets. Go and support these fabulous artists and just have a good night laughing midwinter.
Yes, please.
And Kick Arts are giving away 2 tickets to get along to Mishmash. Jump onto our Facebook page, tag in who you would like to take out for a bit of a laugh, and we'll be drawing that next Monday night.
Well, 2 things I absolutely love in life, and that is fairy tales and the ballet. Put the two together and we have something pretty special with the Royal New Zealand Ballet Company's production of Cinderella coming up. And I am joined by one of the talented cast members, Joshua, who's here to chat all about it just before opening in Wellington. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
It's great to have you here. And I don't want to give away too many spoilers because I've been reading lots about this version. I'm going to hand it to you. Tell us, what are audiences in for when they come and check out Cinderella?
Oh, gosh, honestly, it's so hard to even summarize. And I'm scared of giving away spoilers too because there are a lot of things going on. I think it's a really brilliant production. I think Lachlan, Claire and Emma, who are the design team for it, have been super smart in kind of combining tradition as well as including modern elements, which is super exciting for us at the ballet because I think sometimes we get a bad rap for being too stuck in tradition. So it's nice that I think ballet lovers and big ballet fans will get what they want out of some beautiful choreography and all the beats you'd expect in the classic classic Cinderella story, but also they've got a lot of stuff in there for people that have maybe never seen a ballet before, which is exciting. There's electronics in the music, which is so cool. The colours are bigger and bolder than ever in the costumes, and some of the steps are giving us a run for our money too. So we're being pushed to the limit, but it's super exciting. I'm really nervous too, but I can't wait for people to see it.
That's so cool. And it's interesting what you talk about, you know, I guess the heritage of ballet and the Royal Center Ballet Company is coming to something that is always a spectacular, but also I've always loved the fact that I feel I do step back a little bit in time to those wonderful days with the grand sets and the beautiful costumes. But yes, you are in modern times, and you also need to capture a modern audience to keep your future generations coming to support you. So tell us, are you allowed to tell us any of the twists? I mean, a few are out in the media.
Yeah. There's a couple of really good ones in there, I think. Specifically, Cinderella is often kind of like damsel in distressy, I guess, in a way. And so in this production, not only have they given her a little bit more to do with kind of choosing her own destiny, but they've also fleshed out the character of Prince Charming, which is who I'm playing. And he has sort of, they're kind of making them kindred spirits is what they've been saying. So Cinderella and the prince are sort of both on their own journeys to find their own love and their own happiness. And that kind of veers away from the story a little bit, in a way almost pushed together usually. And it's always romantic and a happily ever after, of course, but it's cool that these two main characters, I think, get to choose their own stories. And they're kind of using the prince and Cinderella as the kind of rooted in reality elements of the production. Everyone around them, all the other characters, are massive and comical and extravagant, and they're all about money and status and stuff like that. And then there's these two individuals at the center of it that I think are the more human side. And it's been really fun to act and stuff. And even though their paths may not meet in the same way that you're expecting, I think it's exciting that we're telling multiple love stories in this production that hopefully many people will be able to see themselves in and see themselves reflected in. And we've been saying that there's all colours of the rainbow represented in this production without spoiling too much.
Nice. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. And tell us... Sorry?
No, I was just going to say, and said in the most roundabout long way, which is classic for me. So I'm sorry if you have to edit that down a bit.
Good. You want people to come along and find out more. Tell us about your own sort of journey in the dance world. When did it all start for you?
Yeah, so I was super young. I saw a tango on Shortland Street is my story. And I was 4 years old, so I'm not sure what mum was doing there because I was watching Shortland Street. but it was my first time ever seeing a man dance. And even to this day, it's still not like the most common thing for men to be dancers. And so seeing that as a four-year-old, I just asked her to take me along to learn some. And my journey went in kind of like a zigzaggy way to get to ballet specifically, but I've always been in love with dance. I moved overseas when I was 14 and I did 10 years in the United States and danced around there. And COVID kind of brought me back to New Zealand. And as a young person, as a young Kiwi often does, we go out into the world and think that everything's better out there. And so this kind of COVIDness actually brought me home and made me realize that we have some really special and exciting art going on here. And it's made me feel finally at home with dance, which is cool, being in this country, my home country, which is super exciting.
Yeah, that's cool. Now, I mean, you mentioned it all starting from watching a tango on Shortland Street.
Yeah.
As you've got older, what other dancers or dance companies have inspired you? Who do you look to for inspiration?
Yeah, I've always been really inspired by the movies, actually. I was a tap dancer for a really long time. So Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly, all those greats. My ballet great is probably Baryshnikov, which I'm sure a lot of people have him. And I always loved how he was able to be this amazing ballet dancer that also put on different skins to kind of go into any style. And so my goal's always been just to have as much dance influence around me as possible, whether it's tap or ballet or hip hop or or anything and try and incorporate it into what I'm doing at the moment. But yeah, the movies, I guess, is the short answer.
does Prince Charming get to break out any hip-hop steps?
There is actually one in there that I'm still working on, and I'm thinking it'll be ready right in time for Wednesday night. So,
good luck.
yeah.
So, tell us about the rehearsal period. How long has Cinderella been rehearsing for?
Yeah, so we went into full-time rehearsals about 6 weeks ago, but we'd been doing little bits and pieces here and there throughout this year leading up to it. The production team's been working on it for 3 years, so
wow.
It's interesting. We kind of come into it quite late, which is funny because it is a ballet, but by the time we get to it, a lot of it is already fleshed out, and the dancer's job has kind of been to bring the characters and the steps alive. So it's been an intense 6 weeks, that's for sure. But super rewarding, and it's super fun for me to see all the different dancers that I know and love in this company take on quite unexpected roles for them and see kind of just how broad everyone's talents are. So I'm excited for audiences, especially like the super dedicated fans, to see people in different lights, which will be cool.
Yeah. So we get a lot of young people, sort of early university age students, listen to our show. What advice would you give them around, you know, making this a career like you have?
Oh, yeah. I think the best advice I've ever received is to just go for it, which probably sounds super cheesy, but I was always someone that, like, extra polite, not wanting to put myself forward, hoping that one day something might fall into my lap. And I think the minute that I just decided to, like, not be cocky or like overconfident or anything, but just to like ask for what I want and be okay that I might not get it, you know, but to put myself out there, yeah, and just go for it has been the best thing that's happened to me. And it took a long time, but no one knows that you want something unless you put yourself out there. So
yeah, absolutely. Do you have plans for something after Cinderella?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, we're jam-packed here at the RNZB because we've sadly had our shows for the first half of the year be cancelled. So this is our first production this year, but a couple of those shows have moved to later in the year. So we go straight into our next season is Tutu's on Tour, which is kind of an array of different dance pieces. There's quite a few different contemporary works in there as along with the ballet, and then we go straight into our next one, which is called Venus Rising, which is an all-female choreographed show, which is really massive for the dance world, because even though a lot of women dance and that's kind of the stereotype, it's still men that find themselves in the positions of power often in our world too. So I'm excited to be a part of a program that's like fully female pushed as well, which is very cool. And personally, I'm just trying to nail down that one hip hop move at the moment, so I can't think beyond that too much. Yeah.
Well, we will let you carry on your day and practice your hip hop moves. We wish you every success for the season. I'll be there opening night in Auckland and looking forward to it.
Fantastic.
Cinderella is showing at the St. James Theatre in Wellington from the 3rd of August, up here to Auckland to the Kiritikanawa Theatre from the 10th. Then it's heading to Napier to the Municipal Theatre from the 20th of August, Christchurch for the Isaac Theatre Royal from the 25th, and Dunedin's to Regent Theatre. And tickets are all available on the Royal New Zealand Ballet's website, rnzb.org.nz. That's quite a trip around the country non-stop. Like, there's not a lot of gaps in that.
Yeah, we'll be going from one centre to the next, but I'm so excited to bring especially the Prince's story to all these different communities, and hopefully it will be embraced and loved. Yeah.
Awesome. We wish you a great season, Joshua. Thanks for chatting with us, and we'll look forward to seeing it soon.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
Tell me I've been lying. try to make me laugh. Nothing has to change today. You didn't mean to say I love you. I love you. And I don't want to.
Was the talented James Hunter with Betty and their cover of I Love You, recorded live at Murawai Cafe. And while we're talking about James Hunter, congratulations, he just got engaged last week.
No, we love it when we can promote things that are happening not just in Auckland but all around the country. And our next guests are about to launch a show in Wellington before bringing it up to Auckland. A slightly isolated dog presents the Trojan War. And a big welcome to the show, Jonathan Price and Jack Buchanan. Great to have you here, guys.
Kia ora, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So what is the Trojan War all about? They both stare aimlessly at each other in Zoom land.
You get what's on the tin, I suppose. It is about the... we're attempting to tell the entirety of the Trojan War story, which I don't know if you know, Stephen and Emma, it's massive.
It's one of those, it's kind of like War and Peace, right? Which looks like a...
And that's only one version. And then there's bits in front of that and bits on the end of it too.
Crazy.
So for those that don't know, talk us through the journey for the audience.
Oh my goodness. Jack,
Jake's Sorry. Moving rooms. So we well, this is number three, not including a Christmas show. So Isolated Dog has a collection of what we've come to call the Frenchie shows, but essentially we play a roving troupe of French idiots who attempt to tell a story, a theatrical story, with the audience. And the idea is to create a party in a very fun, sexy vibe in the theatre. And so the last ones that we did were, we did Don Juan almost 8 years ago now. We did Jekyll and Hyde, that we made that 7 years ago. And then we did a Christmas special. And then Trojan War has been delayed and delayed and delayed because of COVID. And now we're finally putting it up.
Fabulous. And how did you get involved, Jack?
I got involved back in, 2017, I think, or 2016, maybe. 2016,
16, yeah.
Yeah, for the second one, Jekyll and Hyde, I was part of making that. I'd sort of seen the company's show, Don Juan, the year before at Circa. I was working at Circa Theatre at the same time doing a different show, and I went and saw Don Juan, and I just thought, oh my God, this is the most amazing piece of theatre I've ever seen. Why aren't I in this? Nice. And then about a year later, they went to make a second one, and the director, Leo Jean, approached me and asked if I wanted to be part of it, and I just couldn't say yes quick enough. And so then from that moment on, I've sort of been, like, good luck getting me out of the company. I've been involved with most things the company's done since then, creating Jekyll and Hyde, remounting Don Juan, remounting Jekyll and Hyde, national tours, international tours, two trips to the Edinburgh Fringe, a couple of tours of Australia, and yeah, now on to making this one, which will be crazier than any of them, I think.
What is it? Now, you said when you saw it that you were like, why aren't I in this? What was it about it that made you go, I need a piece of it?
So, for people who haven't seen these shows or don't know the work of our company, like, it does, the shows are highly interactive, but in a way that doesn't make audience members feel yuck. And, like, we're all a group of makers who hate audience interaction and hate participation, because mostly it's done in a way, I find, that makes the audience the butt of the joke, that makes someone feel uncomfortable so everyone can sort of laugh at their expense. But watching Don Juan in 2015, it didn't do that at all, and everyone who participated in the show was so empowered and emboldened and celebrated by the performers in the story that, like, everyone wanted to be getting up on stage and being the one to be chosen to do the things. And it was just like being at a really great party, and everyone left there feeling sexier than when they walked in, feeling funnier than when they walked in, and I was just like, wow, how do these guys create that in a room full of people? I want to be able to do that.
And so, you know, you're promoted as a mashup of sketch comedy, improv, music and physical theatre. How do you prepare for that? Like, how is the rehearsal process for something that's so mixed?
Well, it's a constant process of making. So our rehearsal is our writing, which is our improvisation, which is our rewriting, you know, and it's all just a constant kind of blender of all those things whirring around, you know, almost too fast to kind of keep track of. But so, you know, from the outside, it probably looks just like madness. There's some sort of semblance of order that comes through, but it's we make in bits essentially, and we try and produce something that makes us giggle, makes us laugh, or kind of gives us a bit of a thrill, makes us go like, oh, imagine if we did this in a theater and involved this audience or these people, how would they respond? And then I suppose the other aspect is that we test in front of people a lot. So we it's not quite an open door policy, but we have a lot of people coming in and out of the rehearsal room, because like the show's very social, and so we have to be very social in the way that we make it.
Now, you're both graduates from training institutes in Wellington, Jack from Toi Whakaari and Jonathan from the university.
I am in 2013, yep.
Yeah, and I went a slightly different route. I'm a graduate of Victoria University, and I've done some separate bits of training as well.
Right, and so did you guys know each other through theatre in Wellington doing that, or are we...
Yeah, we did.
We met in about 2010, I think, didn't we, Jono? Through a youth theatre company called Longcloud Youth Theatre, which I don't know if you guys know about. But, yeah, we were both members of that theatre company, probably about age 18, I would say.
Yeah.
And so we met then, and, yeah, then it wasn't until years later that we ended up working together on these shows.
So how cool is it to be a graduate and now, you know, you did your studies and you're working pretty much full-time, both of you now, in theatre in New Zealand? Like, how cool is that?
It's pretty cool. It's what you want to be doing, eh? It's the goal when you sort of set out into that sort of training, and you know, very aware of, you know, the elements of luck and good fortune that play a part in that as well. But I mean, I think Jono and I are both pretty hungry for work, and when opportunities come up, we say yes to them and we follow them through. And we've been fortunate enough, like with the opportunity with Isolated Dog, for instance, to say yes to an opportunity that has gone on to have life for, you know, 7 or 8 years, and let us perform a couple of these shows hundreds of times each, which is a unique experience and one that I don't think any of us take for granted.
We have some regular questions that actually we haven't been asking a lot lately, Stephen, and I brought them back last week. So that is, you know, if you could go back, do you think when you were those 18-year-old or younger lads doing youth theatre that this would be you 10 years on?
I don't know.
Not 10 years on, because you're not 28 yet.
more than 10 years on. I don't know. I think I would have hoped it would be something like this, and I like to think that if 18-year-old Jack could see me now, he'd be quietly thrilled with what's going on. I mean, we've both managed to forge careers pretty much in theatre, largely, and in the arts. And, it's really exciting, and it's something that continues to bring me joy, and I'm not good at anything else, so I'll keep doing it.
So, Jonathan, slightly different for you to answer. If you could talk to 18-year-old Jonathan, what would you be telling him, knowing what you know now?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, because I was just going to say that if I talked to 18-year-old me going, would you imagine that you'd be here in 10 years? I'd probably say yes, but purely out of naivete, because I didn't know what the industry was like, you know. And then probably if you'd talked to 23-year-old Jono, it would have been a lot more jaded, I promise. And a little kind of overwhelmed by the nature of essentially running your own business, which is what acting is. You're a tradie, essentially. And so, yeah, my advice to 18-year-old would be, it's all the boring stuff, like figure out taxes, like figure out what it means to be a sole trader, all the boring non-artistic stuff, but the stuff that you need to have that as a kind of a platform in order to survive. So if I got onto that sooner, maybe that would have been good.
Now, Jack, you got up to some mischief during COVID-19 lockdowns, from memory, with some interesting videos and songs that entertained the nation. Is there any sort of resurgence coming? Are we looking forward to a post-lockdown number?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I sort of, after lockdown and after Family Lockdown Boogie, I sort of followed it up with another couple of things. I wrote a song for the Electoral Commission about how MMP works, and then made one for New World using only kitchen implements, and then wrote another song about how awful 2020 was, which in hindsight, that song has aged terribly. And I sort of gave that a go for a while because it was sort of a way to keep my creative juices flowing and feel like I was doing something. But honestly, in the last sort of year and a half, other than the horrific Auckland lockdown, which just had me depressed and drinking wine all the time, I've been too busy to do that sort of thing. But what it has done for me is I've had sort of a resurgence of taking myself seriously as a musician, which is really exciting. And I play in a band. We just had our first headline gig on Thursday night in Auckland, which was really cool. We're called Cheap Sav for Dead Friends. I'll give us a plug. And starting a solo music project, not so much the comedy stuff, but something a bit more synth poppy and just for me, and always in the back of my mind thinking at some point I want to create a sort of musical comedy solo theatre show, but it's just about finding the time and the resource to do that at some point. But watch this space. I reckon by 2030 there'll be something.
Always great hearing actors saying, you know, that they're busy and there isn't enough time. That's a positive problem to have. Jonathan, can you tell our listeners where can people go to find out about the two seasons and get tickets for the Trojan War?
Totally. You can head up the BATS website for the Wellington season or the Basement website for the Auckland season. Otherwise, our Instagram and Facebook, which you can find just by searching A Slightly Isolated Dog, is very active most of the time. So that should have plenty of updates for you.
I would love to know before we go, why are you a slightly isolated dog?
Look, Emma, I'd love to know that as well. It's our director, Leo Jean Peters. It's a company that he formed in about 2006. Jono, is that correct?
Yeah, sure.
He's been running it for a while before we were doing these works, and it's a name that he and a couple of friends cooked up back then over some drinks, maybe reflecting how they were feeling in the world at the time. But it's one that stuck, and because under that banner, he's produced a lot of different and award-winning theatrical work. So it's got a bit of a heritage to it now, so it's sticking around. But yeah, I don't know where it comes from.
Look, it's a great conversation starter too, isn't it? Yeah,
that's right.
Well, we wish you all the best for A Trojan War. Can't wait to see it and have a bit of a laugh up here when you bring it back to Tamaki Makaurau and at the Basement, and all the best for BATS. And thank you so much for coming on and having a chat to us on this Sunday evening.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, team.
Our next interview this evening is with a young Kiwi musician, up-and-coming band called Flaxies, who hail from their origins are St Kenegan College, and they're continuing on well after school. So welcome to the show, Benji.
Thank you for having me, Emma. Legend.
No worries at all. So tell us, for our listeners, if you had to describe Flaxies' sound, how would you describe the sound?
I would say we're like a surf rock and reggae band. Yeah, literally like to play a few surf rocky licks and then like to keep it skanking too a little bit. So that's a little bit about who we are.
So if I was to grab your phone and open Spotify, who would I find on your playlist?
My playlist? Oh, I've been jamming. I love a lot of local bands. We have some amazing bands around town. So I love this band called Casper, Frank on Tap, Park Road. And then I'm also a huge Bob Marley fan, and I love a lady called Tash Sultana.
Cool.
Those are my favourites.
And do obviously you said you're into reggae and you mentioned Bob Marley, but yeah. Do you find that your music and your group are hugely influenced by any specific artists?
Well, that's like pretty interesting. We have obviously five members in the band and we are all inspired by such different artists. So, I mean, I would say Eric and I, Eric's the lead player, we are like majorly inspired by reggae. But then you have Nick who loves his surf rock stuff, Eric who loves, you know, a little bit of house music, and then Chris loves his jazz, and then our drummer loves like a bit of trap music. So I guess it's kind of cool because it all just kind of branches from different inspirations and it all comes together as just us, yeah.
So with having five of you, what's your process? Is there kind of someone that's in charge of coming up with a bit of a, like you said, a lick, or is there someone that does lyrics, or do you just kind of all just jam, or what do you do?
Yeah, no, it honestly varies. Nick has a place down in Whitianga. We were there a couple of weeks ago, and we literally sometimes just have a jam in our room in Mount Wellington and then come up with ideas like that. Or sometimes Nick and I will go away and write something and kind of demo it and then bring the idea to the boys. And then everyone kind of just plays it. And then, yeah, we usually like to take it to our shows, and then we can kind of get a better idea of how we want to play it live. And then we kind of try to take it to the studio after that. So that's a little bit about what we do. Sometimes it varies, but that's the like main idea, I'd say.
And you guys grew up in school together, so you've been friends for a while?
We have. I was literally the last member to join. There was a singer before me. We kind of all joined at different times. So Nick and Chris kind of started the band back in year 8, and Chris was on drums or trumpet originally. I can't even remember. But we were like kind of mates through high school, and then it was more like year 12 and year 13 where we really started to like kind of take it more seriously. And then, yeah, the rest is history for us, really.
Do you think when you were in year 12 or 13 playing with this band that you thought you'd still be playing with them a couple of years after leaving school?
Well, it was interesting. I actually was playing rugby for St. Kent's, and then I was playing pretty high up there, and I just was hating it. And then I kind of joined the band, and honestly, like, my family's always loved music as well, and I was just saying, this is what I want to do. So it's kind of, I feel like this is what I was born to do. And I think all the boys feel the same. So it's kind of been something that we've taken our stride, and we just want to do it. We want to do it for the rest of our lives. So, yeah.
And I mean, that's a little bit of a familiar story. There's other St. Kent's old boys that have kind of gone in there for sports and then discovered their passion. The likes of Theo David, who at St. Kent's was known as Lloyd, who's now, of course, on Shortland Street, was a first 15 rugby player until he had his passions. So, you know, it's cool to have that start some way. And I think it's magical when people actually find that theatre, performing arts, music is a life changer.
100%. No, like 100%. I felt the exact same way. I think it's awesome. Like, first 15 was such a cool experience, but yeah, when you find something you really love, you really just want to go for. I think the beauty of it's right there, and you know, having just like a small little family with the Flaxies boys is something pretty special and doesn't come across very often. So yeah, I think finding the musical side's definitely where I belong, and definitely where the other boys belong as well. So,
so you said that you had a bit of a musical family. Where did the singing start? Is singing the only? I shouldn't say the only thing, because I'm a singer too. But do you play instruments as well, or is singing?
Yeah, I do. No, I was never a singer. I was the worst singer in the family, actually. My uncle is a school teacher, musician. He was where I got all my inspiration off. He always had like a cool little studio that I'd pop into when I was younger. I actually popped across a video of me drumming the other day. I was a drummer originally of when I was like 4 years old, having a jam. So that was cool. So yeah, I started off on the drums, and then I moved to playing a bit of guitar, and I made this little Instagram page. And then that's where the boys found me at school, through my Instagram page. And then I was like, oh, bugger, I'll have a go singing. And then, yeah, I've loved it ever since. I think it's like a really cool way to express what I want to, you know, talk about. And but yeah, I'll always at practice kick Jaden off the drums and be like, my turn. So yeah, nah, it's cool. We all kind of dabble in a few instruments. So yeah.
So we've got a couple of kind of staple Kick-Out questions that we ask often. And I'm going to ask you, when you're standing up there getting your Vodafone Music Award or your International Music Star Award, who are you going to be thinking?
Who am I going to be thanking? Oh, too many people, eh? I think my family has always been the biggest one. My mom, my dad, my sister, my uncle, like, those guys have done so much for me. You know, like, music's not an easy path. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs just with anything in life. But, you know, I'm always going and talking to mom about a few things, and she's always giving me the best advice. So her, you know, we're with Parachute this year, and they've been awesome helping us. Just all the connections along the way. Like, there are so many people. This path with music doesn't just come from us. So, you know, there's a lot of people we'd have to thank. But, yeah, I think the main thing, we're very grateful to be able to do what we do, and we're so lucky to be able to play in front of all of our friends and family every time we get on stage. So too many people to thank, but definitely family and especially the boys that I'm playing with.
Awesome. And where would you like to see yourself, say, in 5, 10 years' time?
Well, we've set ourselves a little goal. We obviously really want to build ourselves in the New Zealand music scene first. We'd love to start travelling around the country, and got plans to do that hopefully next year. But hopefully move to Aussie. Would love to get to the East Coast there and then eventually work our way to Europe if we can. Somewhere around London would be a really cool kind of end of 20s place to settle down, I guess.
I've heard that actually we interviewed Graham Candy, ex-Auckland boy who's currently in Germany.
And
he said that, yeah, Germany's the place to go as muso because it's cheaper living than London, it's close to London, and the music scene is sick.
I have to do it. My sister's moving, might be moving there end of the year, so that sounds like a go.
So there's him and Ants Utama over there. So, you know, you've got two Kiwi boys that I'm sure would be happy to put you under a wing and support you as a fellow Kiwi band. So there you go. Dream festival. What would be your dream festival to play in New Zealand?
Oh, dream festival in New Zealand. Gosh, the boys, I would say, I think something like BOMAD would be really cool. I don't know, something a bit funky like that. There's so many festivals we want to play. You know, Rhythm and Alps, Rhythm and Vines, BOMAD, things like that seem so cool. But I think the main one would be, at the moment, we really want to try and get on Lane Wave next year because that's coming back in Auckland. And, you know, seeing we're an Auckland band, we think that would be pretty groovy. So I think hopefully.
Awesome. So I'm going to let you, before you intro your song, any words of inspiration or any good advice for a young musician starting out? Because we have a lot of young people that listen into our radio show. If you were 16 again, what would you be telling yourself or the boys in the band?
Such a good question. Now, there's so much to say. I think the main thing is honestly just work hard. You really have to try and find a group of people, especially if you're an up-and-coming band, find a group of people you really enjoy spending your time around. Work hard, reach out to other bands. Like, we're not, you know, it's scary out there. So with social media, you can do that so easily. Reach out to other bands, find people of similar size and get gigging and just gig and gig and gig and practice and practice and practice. And the reward will come your way if you do it. So I think that's the biggest piece of advice. That's what we've done. It's scary. We still don't know what we're doing. I guess no one even knows what they're doing. So just keep working hard, put the head down and see where things go.
Fabulous. Now, we're going to play a track. Have you decided what that's going to be?
Oh, any one of our tracks.
Anyone.
Any one of our tracks.
Can you think of one so that I can let you introduce it before we go?
We may as well keep it with Lot 61. I think that's our best work that we're most proud of. So I think we'll keep it with Lot 61.
Awesome. So I'm going to let you end your interview by introducing Lot 61 here on Kick-Ass. Take it away.
Hey, this is Benji from Flaxies, and you're listening to Lot 61 on Kick-Ass. Cheers.
Is anybody out there? Bobby bought yourself, girl. Personal accusations about the way you behave them now. Well, I'm searching for the answers. Got to go and get them. This position, just trying to make a difference. Take all that you have and double you. Is it ever enough? So in that deep end, put to the test. But I so want. Did you take your medication? Yeah. Love it.
conversation. Tell me, how are you feeling? Is it nothing or is it hidden? Start to write your fingers. Start up in a twister. Don't try if you let me. Don't work that cap down me, say. Play for that you hurt. Don't end up deep in suicide, but I saw an angel.
Now, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome to Kick Arts the next two guests, a mother and daughter who have ventured together to write a book. Now, not all mothers and daughters would be in a state to do this, so I'm really proud of them. It's called The Kids Will Be All Right, A Guide to Raising Teens in a Complex World. And that alone, The Kids Will Be All Right, must be all right in your house, the fact that you've curled up together to write a book. So welcome to the show, Molly and Robin. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
It's lovely to have you here. Now, Robin, I'm going to start with you. Tell us, where, first of all, did the idea of writing a book called The Kids Will Be All Right come from?
Well, I actually set up a social enterprise about 12 years ago, looking at health and well-being in the community. And what came from that was schools really needing help with their community of parents, but also with their community of students. And so we took the time to put some programs together on some of those hot topics that parents were telling us, we don't feel equipped for this topic. You know, it's new for us. It's new terrain for us. And actually, funnily enough, believe it or not, actually students were saying to us, we need our trusted adults a little bit more skilled up in these topics to support us. So we had a publisher sort of ask whether we would put some of those programs into a book format. And, of course, Molly being Molly, wanted to have some input into that. And so much so over the first few months of looking at writing it that she ended up being a co-author, which was fabulous.
But how cool is that, though? I mean, as you say, there's so many issues out there for parents these days. The issues are changing and moving faster than ever as well. So to have both perspectives from a parent and from someone who was very, not so long ago, a teenager, to put the two things together, I think it's fantastic. Molly, where did the inspiration come from you? Are some of these topics like your own journey and story in this, or your friends' stories?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of weave some of my like anecdotes throughout the books in each chapter. I kind of share what my experience was, what my peers were feeling or are feeling. And Mum puts it in this really beautiful way. It's kind of like a lighthouse that shines a little light on, you know, what potentially your teens are going through right now. And it also kind of helps to bring those parents back to how maybe they were feeling when they were a teenager as well.
Nice. How did you decide what topics go in and what don't? Because there's so many.
That's true.
And you've covered a lot.
Yeah, we have, you know, everything from, you know, bullying to teens and tech. We talk about vaping, consent. Mum, do you want to take this one?
Sure. I mean, look, at the end of the day, we get so much feedback from delivering programs from parents. They were saying, please include this topic, which might be on rainbow teens or the language around diversity. Or we might have got feedback from students saying, could you please make sure that there's some information there about consent? Because it's a real big topic for us at the moment. We're talking about it amongst ourselves all the time. And we want our parents and caregivers to be clued up in the language. And I think it's important as well that it's not so much to give parents the information so that they can sort of bombard the teen with what they know. It's much more about arming them with information so that they can be in a protective capacity, so that they can be, you know, on the same page, but also having those communication skills, which we also talk about in the book, which allows parents to kind of find the tools to be able to open safe spaces for teens. Because when the teens fill those spaces, you learn so much from where they're at and the conversations they're having, and then you can provide that supportive sort of aspect of the parenting that you want to do.
Nice. When someone picks up the book, do they get a sense of you writing collaboratively, or is it through the voice of a mum and a daughter at separate times?
That's a great question, actually. Molly's definitely got her, they're called corridors, so little conversations which are highlighted in each chapter and throughout. But to be honest, it was a collaborative affair. I mean, every time I would go ahead and research and then write something, you know, I'd ask her whether that was sort of up to speed with what teens are saying. And so there's that input from her all the way through, as well as her corridors.
Nice. Is there an issue, Molly, at the forefront at the moment that you think is standing out for young people more than anything else? Is there that one or two sort of biggies at the moment?
I think that mental health and well-being is a massive one. It's something that I'm really passionate about talking about, and, you know, reducing the stigma around. I really love our chapter on mental health and well-being. We've got some great resources. We've got like really light and casual ways of talking about it, which I think is really important. But we also have, you know, some information for parents who are thinking that maybe it's getting a bit more serious and they need to step in. Yeah, I think we talk about growing resiliency and emotional intelligence and all those important things. And I know that the pandemic has really impacted so many young people. So I think it's an incredibly important topic. But obviously we cover so much that are all important as well. So yeah.
And Robin, is this your first venture into being an author?
Of a book, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I write the majority of the programs that Nest Consulting, which is my social enterprise, actually put out into schools. So I have that experience. And I thought, you know, when I was asked, I was like, yep, no problem. But actually,
the
size of the book, it was kind of like, you know, you asked Molly which topics, and it was just, where do you stop, you know?
But it's always good to have a sequel.
Oh my goodness.
Was it bigger than you expected, Molly, the whole process?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think we spent over 2 years on it. And I think a joke that we made is that it's a dual purpose. It could be used as a doorstop because it is, it's a chunky one. But yeah, no, it is. We really had to decide on where we wanted to delve deeper and, you know, when we can provide a summary and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's just, it can go on and on.
Really.
I think we divided it quite neatly into three sections. So we've got, you know, all those things that you're going to wrangle with and your teens are wrangling with as well, and some of those things that Molly already listed. And then we've got a section on when your teen is ready to think more about when they're about to, as Molly calls it, adulting. So there's tips and tricks around that. And then the final third is around more sort of the global topics that a lot of teens are talking about and that they need some information about as well. So hopefully it's easy to use. It kind of starts with an overview in each chapter and then moves on to a bit of a deep dive if you want that. And it's got some statistics, a lot of Australasian statistics too. And then it goes to where, you know, what are conversation starters? How do you open the topic in the first place? How do you keep a topic going? So it's got lots of tools for parents in that regard as well.
Yeah, and I love your title, The Kids Will Be All Right, and you summed it up there about the conversation starters. It's about having the conversations, isn't it, and finding that safe space. For me, it was always driving the teenager in the car somewhere, and for some reason, going the very long, long way that they never worked out because they're not eyeballing you, and it was those wonderful conversations that you could just do the house check-in as well as everything all right, and laugh along about relationships and things like that. I guess it's people finding that safe space to have that conversation.
Absolutely. We talk about that in the book, actually, the car trick. It's one of my favourites as well. You know, even now I find myself driving home from work and I've got mum on speakerphone and I'm just, you know, having a download about the day and having a vent. And yeah, it's beautiful.
And that's not just for teenagers. I do that with adult staff where I work. If I sense someone's having a problem, they're coming along with me to a meeting because that car trips. There's something they, and they can't escape.
Exactly. No pressure, but yeah, no escape.
But as parents, you know, we do get it wrong. We do overreact, or we react in the moment. And, you know, that's something that's just happened and we just want to deal with it. It's also learning to breathe and have, you know, do we really need to sort it today? We're actually having a bit of distance and finding that safe space is so important. What are you up to these days, Molly? Tell our listeners, what do you do during the day?
Well, I have been working at the Ministry of Health for the past just under a year, but I've just moved over to the Ministry of Education. So I'm doing lots of admin support and advisor support in those areas, which I'm loving, actually. It's great.
Awesome. You must be a proud mum, Robin. To see her grow like this, but also to be able to produce something of this quality together. How cool is that?
It's so cool. I mean, everyone, there's no perfect parenting. And, you know, it was a journey through Molly's teens and her siblings. And, you know, to come out the other end of that as well and have the relationship where you can actually build this book as a resource for parents and kids has just been phenomenal. So, yeah, really happy.
Where to next, team? Anything else on the horizon?
Oh my goodness. I'm still recovering from this massive project. But maybe, I mean, you know, who knows?
I think there's a multitude of things that can come from this book, and it is the space that I work in, and why not? So it's exciting to see what comes next.
Yeah. And a really good tool to get out, as you say, through our schools and educators, but also through schools to the parents. Who might be travelling any one or many of the journeys that you mentioned inside your book. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, we wish you every success. The book is available now. The Kids Will Be All Right. You need to grab it. We'll pop it up on our social media as well with where you can track it down. And I wish you every success with it. I look forward to seeing where it takes you. I've read some of your early reviews you've posted. It's outstanding. I think it's going to go a long way. So congratulations. And it's so cool to see a mother-daughter input into something like this. Well done.
Thank you so much, Stephen. It was really nice to see you.
Well, it was the end of the month last week's recording, so we thought that we would get in our fantastic sponsor for the month of July, Eni Benzinelli, and say thank you in person and have a bit of a catch-up. So, kia ora, Eni.
Hey, how are you?
Very good, thank you. So, for our listeners, give us a quick, who is Eni Benzinelli Web Design and how are you associated with KickArt?
Oh, well, for the long-time fans of KickArt, I've been for many years, 5-6 years on KickArt, almost every Sunday. So, yeah, I was there from the beginning and always loved the idea what KickArt does for the, you know, arts and more. Around Auckland now, around New Zealand or Aotearoa, so it's great. I stepped back a little bit from the mics, but I still like to be involved in the background and help out. So we have done the website. Well, now the website, Emma knows how to get it rolling, so it doesn't really need me anymore. But it's always nice to get the odd question here and there and help out to make sure that everything works just fine. So it's always a pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about your company and what sort of things are you doing for other people?
Oh, well, I do. Do you have like 2 hours time? Mm-hmm. I do, yeah, design, web design, editing, everything that I can help in that sense of job. So I step in. I'm a problem solver. So I always try to find the best solution to get things done, and also in a sustainable way that it's gonna last as long as possible, despite technology being always moving fast and faster. It's just nice to try to find a good solution to get things done. And I enjoy the variety that my little company offers me to do. So I'll be in the morning creating a website, in the afternoon editing a short video, and being as well working from home, it's good to... Just I can just reach out to everywhere in the world. So I was just finishing a video edit for a client in New York, which it's fun. And perhaps now also Canada start to come in. So the Anybizuan is kind of expanding worldwide, which is fun.
And of course, Eni was the person behind our relaunch. It's over a year ago now that we relaunched our website with our new logo and everything, which was Eni's work, and we super appreciate that. And even though I'm able to do most of the website stuff, I have to say it's also fabulous to be able to text, to message, to send an email saying, help, I don't know what I've done when I do something wrong. So thank you so much, Eni, for doing that. And we just really appreciate having you as our long-time supporter, lifetime friend, and really appreciated your sponsorship for the month of July.
Oh, you're welcome. It's just, I appreciate all your work you two do for the show and for the community. It's I think it's always... when you look at all the work you put in, it's just a pleasure to just give you a little hand to keep going and keep going forward, which sometimes I think some people don't realize really how much work you two put in. And this is my little, and I know because I was there, and I, sacrificing every Sunday and being live or, pre-recording if it doesn't work, is so much behind it. And I really know, and I really enjoy just give you a little hand. It's not much, but,
Thank you. It's really kind and generous. And our way to pay back the favour as an arts community is to make sure we support those who support the arts. So, Eni, how can people get in touch if they've got a creative need for a website, a video or anything? How can they get in touch with you?
So I have a website like everybody else. I'm updating it, but it always roll over because all the client come all this first. But you can find me at benzonelli.nz. And if you wanted to email me directly, just eni@benzonelli.nz. And ask, there is no little question or big question. Just ask if I can help. I'm happy to help you find a good solution.
Fantastic. And as we've said, we do not have a sponsor for August going forward yet, or the next few months. So if you are out there and you're a passionate arts person, you don't need to be an artist yourself. You might just be a supporter of the arts in some way and want to help us continue to keep the arts visible and the way that we support arts throughout Aotearoa. Let us know, drop us a line at info@kickarts.org.nz. Well, an eclectic mix from dance to books to New Zealand music. And we must say too, it's been fabulous since we put the call out for wanting New Zealand music. The amount of people that have been contacting us with their new tracks, because we love playing new New Zealand music and helping people get their song up on air. So if you've got new New Zealand music, remember to let us know. Email us at info@kickarts.org.nz.
And what I've loved over the last month or so, Emma, the amount of times we've done interviews on Zoom and people are at rehearsal. We've talked to them like in the wings or out in the hall, or they've had a break. And the lovely gentleman, Josh, from the Royal New Zealand Ballet, stepping away from a very busy dance practice to whiz to his hotel and chat to us. That's the sort of stuff, you know, like the beauty of Zoom. You can fit 10 minutes into your schedule. So don't be afraid to reach out to us. We'd love to chat to you.
Yeah, and we want to hear from all types. Like if you're working on a show backstage, let us know what it's like backstage. Dressing, hair and makeup, anything, just anything to do with the arts, let us know. Maybe you're curating something at a local art gallery. Get in touch.
Absolutely. Email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Well, another busy week ahead, no doubt.
A busy week for sure. Iva Waiori jumped along to the Basement Theatre to see Hene Te Rehia from Tuatara Collective. The girls were absolutely amazing. And, of course, next week they've got Pati with Kaha. And this weekend I'm off to see Massive Companies, What We're Made Of, Kristen School's Newsies Junior, and on Friday night along to Harlequin's Intern Project. And believe it or not, because of how much talking we did tonight with so much happening around Aotearoa, we've actually ran out of time, so we won't be ending with a song. But of course, like always, we'll be ending with our outro music, which of course was written by the amazing Ant Tarrant, who is currently overseas busting his move all around Europe.
We wish all our listeners a fabulous week, and make sure you
kick some ass.
In a week, don't forget to brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Bye, bye, we'll see you in a week. Don't forget to brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R, R, R. Go kick some R.